Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Great People TV. Our topic today is women in leadership and in sport. But as usual, before I go to our topic, please follow the Great People TV protocol, which is to like and follow our social media handles, which is Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My name is Ben Ibrahim, and it's a pleasure to be your host and our guest today is the one and only Professor Dr. Shyamala Subramaniam, aka Prof, who is a senior computer science academic at University Putra, Malaysia, and is also the deputy president of the Malaysian Hockey Confederation. Without further ado, I would like to introduce on Great People TV our wonderful guest, Professor Dr. Shyamala Subramaniam, aka Prof. Prof, how have you been? And thank you for coming on Great People TV.
Hi, Ben. Such an honor, as always, to be on your show. Thank you very much. I hope you're doing great yourself.
Can't complain, Prof. But Prof, just as a funny question to start our discussion today, I read somewhere, and I like to think it's true in a good way, that you don't take holidays, you don't take naps, you don't watch movies, and the only time that you do not reply to WhatsApp is when you are asleep, and that's not at home. Is when you're on a plane overseas somewhere. Is that true?
kind of, Ben. I've bucked up a little bit. What is this? I like Netflix, so I do watch movies now.
Right.
Thanks to Netflix. But it is quite a packed schedule, Ben. It's true.
So it is true what they say, though. You are a constant workaholic.
I guess I have to unfortunately agree to that. I'll die without work, I think.
Well, that's a good thing. And let's start our discussion that way. You had such a successful career as an athlete. How did you make that transition from athlete to a leader, an all-round leader that can administer, that can do, and can strategically think at the same time?
That's so kind of you, Ben. Actually, I think it all boils down to what I wanted to do when I was young, Ben. And somehow or other, I never wanted sports to leave the honor I gave it as a passion. I didn't want it to be a career for me. I wanted it to be something that I do alongside of something I would call a profession, actually. You know? Along the way, I've actually got into computer science, not by a manufacturing way in the sense that I grew up loving computer science, but I just got into computer science at the right time, at the right place. You know, it was the boom of computer science back in the 1990s. So when you get a course for computer science, you can't go wrong. And eventually, I've got into that. And somehow or other, along the way, I had a very, very good professor who was a visiting professor from India, actually. And he actually got me very engaged into research, actually. And, research is very much related to the academic world back early 2000. But now you see research different. You see a lot of people working in the corporate bodies also doing research, having PhDs. But back in the early 2000s, you know, if you want to do research, best place to be is the academics. And I've somehow or other really actually taken a very big liking to teaching and supervision and working with students and doing research in the field of computer science, Ben. And I think when I retired, I played for the country for about 1 or 2 years. And then eventually, it isn't like what we do for the athletes now. At that time, there's a lot of constraints. So I think when I played for Malaysia, I was already very much at the peak of my academics as well. So I decided to opt, to concentrate on my academics. And then eventually I got, the irony of it, because I was in computer science. So back in 1995, I was the IT executive of women's hockey at Stadium Pantai for the Commonwealth Games. So that was my first blend of association together with computer science and hockey. And then I think my official from Selangor Hockey were very big-hearted to see some potential in me, Ben. Actually, I owe it to them because they are the ones who actually took me and threw me into the Malaysian women's hockey as something they felt that I could do. And that's how I got that leap when I was actually 26 years old, Ben, into administration. So when I started as secretary of women's hockey, it was the first year I also started my PhD. So it was concurrent, actually, two very huge things in my life. But they both complement each other and give you some kind of dynamics that keep your engine moving, Ben.
Well, that's very interesting that you say that, because no disrespect, because the academic world, it's always evolving, especially with technology, no pun intended. And it's a very traditional discipline for someone who's always working there versus someone who's a CEO or president of an association or an organization or as an entrepreneur. And as an entrepreneur, as a operational CEO, you'll see tangible results. But in the academic world, you'll see intangible results and tangible processes. So what is it that keeps you in the academic line of work? Because, again, no disrespect, we could so easily see you in the operational CEO world kicking a lot of goals or scoring goals.
Okay, that's sweet, man. Actually, you know, the world of academics has taken a big change, man, over the years, you know. And it is actually, ironically, as pressuring as the corporate world. In fact, you know, when you look at the career nowadays, yeah, it's no more. Back in 2003-04 when I started teaching, it was about lecturing and research was actually something that you do over and above and what you like to do. You know, it's not a KPI and so on. But over the years, I think this professorship definition has become something very well defined. Ben, you know, we have publications. And then now, you know, when I kind of fill up my appraisal every year, it's about 14 sections, Ben. So you make sure you are very holistic in the academic world. Teaching happens to be one element of a big element out of it, but it's also research. And there's also a lot of things about securing grants as well as commercializing your products, Ben, which is not easy because, no, you know, it is a blend between the academic world and the real world. And with all these other responsibilities we have, we also need to operate like a private organization that's also trying to make an impact with the research that you've done. So the thing I find it very thrilling in this academic world, you know, publications are something I really like. It's not that easy getting to publish, but they have set very empirical measures actually to this profession now, Ben, compared to what it used to be. Even if you look at the teaching process, I remember when I was a student, my lecturer just put some OHP slides and then the guy just talks, we all copy the note, run to the library, you know, get past your questions and so on. It's so well articulated now, Ben. You know, you have slides, you have online recordings, you have 100%. Notes and well-defined things, you know. So there's been quite a bit of a transition, but I suppose the element of commercialization into the academic world, that means your research element, has become something that it must have an impact on community. No more just about publishing and making a world of a difference in your own world, but it's also to the community. It's something like that project I'm working on with the MSN. It's actually about taking the product and actually executing, and it has its own challenges because we have our other responsibility. We're not running a company, yeah? So that makes it thrilling, Ben.
Let's talk about, like you said, let's talk about something else that's not so straightforward, something that you do extremely well, something that is very challenging, and you're doing it concurrently while doing this very, very demanding academic job, Malaysian sports. More specifically, Malaysian hockey. You are the deputy president of the Malaysian Hockey Confederation. Now, deputy president, that's massive. Not only are you young, but very frankly, you are female.
Okay.
How did you rise to that position? Let's start there.
that's a nice way of putting it, Ben. Thank you. Thank you very much. It is a position that has a great amount of responsibility. And I think when you go down history, Malaysian women's hockey and men's hockey are both very two powerful organizations, Ben.
Super.
I was fortunate. Super big. Men's hockey, very big. MWHA was super big at that time back in history as well. And you know, when you look at history, we're very proud that the Malaysian women's hockey actually played a big role in even forming Asian hockey, you know, the women's Asian hockey element and so on. But if you look at overall, one of the things that I'm very proud to have been part of was the merger between the MHF and MWHA, which was actually huge, Ben. Not easy. I think we were the last three organizations in the last three countries actually that merged, India, Australia and us, because we were three countries that had very strong independent organizations for both genders. So during that merger period, one of the things that I truly respect the men's hockey as well. I think at the initial point of merger, though very, very challenging and not that easy to understand when, as equal partners, this is like a merger of two big companies. Everybody has got a share and you need to know which piece of the cake. And when you compare men's hockey to women's hockey, yes, most naturally, women's hockey definitely have a smaller portion of the cake in which you look at. But they were very, very open-minded. To listen to our, you know, our deliberations. And we went through almost, I still remember, with our current king, who was our president at that time, was very big-hearted to actually sit down and have 17 different heated meetings in discussing and so 17. On. And yeah, exactly, Ben. You know, and it's nice. It's nice to discuss. It's nice to have a difference of opinion and then come to a conclusion that today you see, it's so well represented, I think, in the world when we're talking about gender equality and so on. I think MHC has one of the best architectures that actually clearly states it's already been achieved. So, and I owe a lot to my Malaysian women's hockey, because actually moving up the ladder from secretary's post, I never envisioned of sitting in vice president or deputy, because I always pictured myself to be in the secretary's post. I'm so used to doing the work. But at the first merger, when we merged, there was the position of senior vice president. It was the ladies who actually told me that they wanted me to move up to that position because they felt that would be a more significant position to actually do some difference as compared to a secretary's post, which was operational event. And then as we moved on to deputy president, then I contested and, you know, somehow or other winning with the contest, there's a different thrill to it.
Of course. Then
winning, you know, at that moment, I had, you know, won many elections uncontested because, you know, the women's hockey was a smaller family. So when we merged and it was the first election I had, actually, it was very interesting to actually contest, to convince people. And I am very grateful to the members to have given me the faith to actually become deputy president. And I work very hard, Ben, so that they don't see it as a gender-based position.
Yes.
I think that's important, very important. I always personally feel women have to work very hard because men work very hard. That's what I see. They really work very hard. It's not that they don't have anything to do at home. They all have work to do. But this is a sacrifice every individual has to take. And they also work tremendously. So if we want to sit in a seat, we must make sure we honor it because we are there on merits. And they cannot look at us, okay, you're sitting there because of a gender post. We must give you only certain outlines of work that you're able to. So that is one thing that it's not easy because, you know, the men's world is different. When we enter the men's world, is different. But the men, I think I have worked with in MHC, are fantastic. You know, they have been very accommodative and very open, Ben, to treat us as an equal partner. And I think with Dato' Subhan now, it's very good because the women's hockey as well have received equal attention. We don't have a discrepancy or, you know, or second grade or something there. So it is one of those reasons that I've got many good women who have pushed me to that post and many good men who have supported me, Ben.
Fantastic. But let's talk about that a little bit further, because the reason why we have brought you on this show is to talk about women in leadership and women in sport. And you said it so well. A lot of people see that, oh, you just got that position because of the quota. You got this position because of diversity. But in your case, that's not the case. You got there because you have the experience, you have the know-how, you have the knowledge, and you have the capability to lead Malaysian hockey to another level. Malaysian women's hockey, once upon a time, were getting smacked left, right, and center. These days, we're beating the Irish. Drew with India 4-4 not too long ago. And are really, really on the road to, God willing, inshallah, being Olympians one day, not just for the female side, but for the male side as well. But what's your view? Because let's be honest, at the end of the day, we are Asian. We live in a very, very traditional culture that is very difficult to change. The mindset of the people, you're a woman, you should be at home, you should look after the children. And that mindset really seeps into young females. But a lot of young females out there want to lead. They not necessarily want to stay at home and have children, you know, because of the mindset. So how do we as a society change this mindset that women can lead and be the change, not just in hockey, but in life?
That's perfectly said, Ben. You know, one of the things, Ben, which I always feel that, you know, it's just like us being in an organization that you can see a lot of people win. You know? You see, this is one thing. When you surround yourself, I remember, I love reading these autobiographies, motivation books and so on. So Robin Sharma happens to be one of my favorites as well. So one of the things that he wrote in his book was that, you know, the people we surround with, their behavior is as infectious as the most infectious disease, which I believe is very related to where we surround ourselves. So if us as leaders, Ben, there must come a point of time that we do two things. The first point, I can tell you honestly, is to survive. You have to make sure you bring honor to the seat. You know, you can't think about helping others because first and foremost, very honestly, you need to survive to secure yourself.
That's so right. That you
feel worthy of the chair.
What's the point if you're going to be shot down very quickly?
Exactly. And if you are shaky and you don't leave a good legacy for the next person, that brings doubt. Whenever I sit on this chair, to tell you the truth, I always want to make sure there will be never a constitutional review because that is a position non-deserving based on the gender. That's number one. Number two, we must reach a stage where we concurrently start developing others, Ben. And you see, when it comes to women, as what you perfectly said, the mentality of us is to actually stay at home, to, you know, we mother is very important. So we have to find a winning equation in this because one of the things is, of course, if you look at women as a whole, not only in sports, they're all changing men. Many are career-based, many are trying to study. The world is taking a change, but it might not be a significant percentage compared to those who still have to do other responsibilities. We mean a lot to them. So what we need to do is basically we need to get a lot of success stories, which is what I've been trying very hard, Ben. When I became secretary in 1999, up to today, the batch of girls who have been with me as players, I think so many have already transitioned into managerial post, Ben. And they are into coaches, into things. And what we need to do, we need to help a lot of these people to look good, Ben. So exactly what I kind of posted today is about what we show that can become a person for the younger ones when they face the challenges to have something to follow. A kind of a, you know, a role model thing. So I think what's important is one, we must have proper schemes that actually address this, Ben. You see, when I was a director of women and sports in 2005 and 6, the first women games, what we did was we had a nursery actually. But the concept was to actually keep kids, the parents, the mothers could bring the kids there. Of course, you know, Ben, it's a big thing that we did because nobody's going to leave their kids there and just go away for some sports and you want to make sure whether it's done nicely. But basically, we need to address things like this so that we can assist women so they don't have to shirk their responsibility at home. But when the kids are small, we need to actually extend a lot of help to highly talented women who must not let go that period of time. Number two, they must be able to see role models in their life. So we must get many women who we feel have the ability to do it and start pushing them to the front, getting them to hold the decision. And they will relate very well to their generation of kids, Ben. And that's very important. So I think the ability to help others to come up, to increase the number of women pools, to show the different success stories about how in different scales they are able to do something, maybe as a coach, maybe as an administration, secretary position-wise, we need to create that and increase so that the younger ones will have something to follow with.
Right,
and that number seems to be significantly increasing now.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point, because I've only got two more questions left, which leads me to my next question. Because in Malaysian sport, not just hockey, you don't have a lot to select from, okay? Because there's not a lot of females playing sport, but we're trying to change that. You and I are trying to change that. The whole the small ecosystem is trying to change that. Again, back to the mindset of a female growing up. Oh, no, I want to learn how to cook. I want to learn how to do well in academics. But not on the agenda, I want to learn how to play a sport, and I want to learn how to play a sport well. Mm-hmm. How do we change that mentality? Because you and I believe that if a female has confidence on the pitch, it will lead to them becoming an outstanding leader.
Yeah.
In whatever field.
Agreed, Ben. You see, one of the things, Ben, that they need to actually clearly understand is sport itself needs to survive.
Survival is the key word today, Prof. Yeah.
Yes. Because you know why? At one time, a long time ago, sports was everything. It was clearly understood. You don't need to define why it's good. Because, you know, kids didn't have TV. Kids didn't have other activities. People didn't have much choices to actually prove their relevance on this planet. But today, they can have many things, Ben. Not only in sports. They can do debating. They can do art. They can do a lot of others. You know, when you look at American Idol, you look at the singing competitions, or the music industry has opened, democratized their industry so well. You don't need to wait for, you know, like every 4 years for a major event to happen, Ben. So sports itself is in a position that we are now having to look at ourselves so that people will want to engage in this to make a difference in their life. That's why, you know, I always tell people it's good to keep the politics out, keep it internal so that we don't spoil the name of sports that people don't want to come in because it looks like, oh, it's so messy. So one of the things that's very good is, you know, when they come into sports, what are the traits that make them survive in other areas? For example, like even in computer science, if you're going to apply for a job, Ben, you know, it's already become now computerized. You put in your CV because they're smart, you know, these kids. There's no more exclusivity. So there are many of them, they're very smart. So the different factor is whether you can work under pressure, you can work with other people. So sometimes we need to educate them that getting involved with sports actually will build your characters for you to survive in the corporate world or in any other part of your life, even being a good mother for the better.
Yeah.
So that is what we need to make them understand, that the sports, how it fits in into different ecosystems, you know, Ben. Then they will understand. Even for the matter, if you want to be a good mother, you got to understand your kids' sports. You need to know how to prepare a meal. You need, like yesterday when I was at the event, I thanked the parents because for them to sit there from morning until evening and, you know, with such eagerness looking at their kids, holding a water bottle and so on, I told the kids to go home and say thank you to your parents, because if they don't believe in this, you won't be here. You'll probably be at home watching TV and you never know what you are missing out, you see. So I think that's the main thing we need to do, Ben. You know, sports has tremendous benefit. Many business deals are struck at a golf session and then people go cycling together to discuss projects. People play badminton. And so many things that they do together that will actually have significance in other areas of life. Even going for marathons, you can see the number of non-sports people going for marathons because they find it to be such a satisfying achievement, you know, the finisher, and then they put it on their Facebook. So you can see the impact of sports is touching a lot of people's life. We sportsmen need to know how to leverage on that.
No, it's really, really... You've hit it right the nail on the head, Prof. I don't think anybody has explained that so well and so simplistically in terms of survival. Yes, a leader needs to survive first, and not in a very selfish way, in a, okay, prove to people that I can do the job and then bring others into the job. So I think that's a really, really good way to look at it. And maybe when some people, the next time someone gets jealous of a person who is in leadership, hey, they're trying to survive. They're trying to fight the wolves. Final question, Prof. It's been a great conversation on Great People TV. What's your advice for young girls, young teenagers who do aspire to lead, but, you know, and what's your advice to them to stand by their guns and say, hey, you can do this. You don't have to follow the stereotypes. You can be you.
I agree with that, Ben. You know, the most important thing they must know is you must be willing to work, Ben. You cannot expect an easy road because you happen to be a girl. that I think will be very sad to the women gender if people expected the roads to be paved. And I wouldn't want, on my own, as an individual myself, I wouldn't want the road to be paved for me because I would want to survive the road on equal merits with other people, irrelevant of gender or any other factor. Then number two, they must want to be very competent. Ben, you cannot sit in a position and just expect people to accept you, or you know whether you are taking a longer period of time to learn the trade. You must be willing. If you must always think, if somebody else sat in that seat, how much better would they do, and how much more benefit would the people we govern actually benefit from them sitting there? So we cannot sit and just think that, okay, we are the best. You know, we are sacrificing our time. Basically, no one sacrifices anything, but it's a choice. Whatever you do is by choice, and it makes you a happier person because you're making a difference in this world. So they must want to actually work hard, be competent. And the last thing which is very important is that you will face challenges irrelevant of your gender. Okay, of course, gender happens to be one of the things, which, especially because it's sports. But you must understand that you should not run away from this. You must find a way to politically and smartly survive. Like what I love about the men is solidarity among them, you know. Because they enjoy many common things, Ben. They can fight, and tomorrow they will be playing a match of hockey, social hockey, and then they will probably go for a nice makan after that. So one of the things that they need to understand is you need to have solidarity. You need to work with other people. You also need to know that you must gauge your relevance based on other people's perception, not on your own. That's very important. It's difficult because it involves a lot of politics. Sometimes we feel that what others' opinion of us shouldn't matter, but it does, because you must be able to gauge what really matters, what hurts, and what actually really needs to be done so that you are relevant in a very gray area of leadership, Ben. You know, leadership will come, but when you lead, number one, you must make sure the ones who follow are following the right way. And you must make sure that everyone that you lead actually rise with you. You cannot be selfish and just think for yourself. You know, the traditional thoughts don't work that way. You need a strong team, a very strong team. You must have a big team. You must be able to make a difference for people, and you must earn your respect and not expect to get it just because you're sitting on in that box that's given to you, Ben.
Well, Prof, I'm just going to sum it up in three very strong words. Survival, sacrifice, and solidarity. Survival, you got to survive in the leadership position that you've been appointed, and that you've done extremely well. Sacrifice, there is no such thing as sacrifice. If you're wanting people to feel sorry for you and to give you points for the sacrifices that you make, don't do this job. And the final thing is you do it because of solidarity. Solidarity of the group, and in your case, for your university, for Malaysian hockey to move forward. Correct?
Perfectly said, Ben, as always.
As always. That's why you and I get along really, really well, Prof. Well, no, Prof, I'm going to hashtag this with SSS, you know, for this particular episode. So when people look back on this episode, they can look back at all those three keywords, because nobody, Prof, has ever given, well, myself or Great People TV, that antidote on leadership on the three S's of sacrifice, survival, and solidarity. Professor Shamala, and another S, Professor Shamala, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for being a guest on Great People TV. Anytime you want to come back and tell more great leadership stories, hit me up on WhatsApp. We'll have you back on the show with pleasure.
Thank you so much, Ben. Always an honor. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to share this on your show.
100%, Prof. Catch you next time.
Okay.
Wow, there's a first time for everything, isn't it? And that's the best part about Great People TV. You learn something new every day. And what we learned today is about triple S: solidarity, no sacrifice, and survival. Survival of the leadership position that you are in. Well said by the other S, which is Professor Shyamala. So thanks to Professor Shyamala for coming on board Great People TV. Thank you for watching today, and we'll catch you next week on another episode of Great People TV. Take care, everyone, and stay safe.